Hey, y'all, so in case you haven't heard, which you should have because you should have listened to last week's episode, this is now the Maximum Fun Drive. We are in the midst of it. This is the time when you can upgrade or become a member of the Maximum Fun family in the Fanti fam by joining and helping to support the show. We're going to give you more information momentarily, but, you know, we just want to let you know what's happening right now.
Yes, the Max Fun Drive is only 2 weeks out of the entire year. These are those 2 weeks. The reason that they're important is because we need your support. The Max Fun Drive is when you, our listeners, can show up and really show your appreciation for the shows by becoming Maximum Fun members. Upgrading members or boosting members. For more information on the Max Fun Drive, go to MaximumFun.org/join. Now let's get to the show. Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am worried about the state of the world, but thankful that the Kardashians are back. Jared Hill.
Are you being serious or is that just like a joke? Do you really watch the Kardashians?
I was going to say, I'm actually deeply concerned about the state of the world, and I've been watching the show.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I am entertainment journalist, editor, authoress, times two, Travell Anderson. Coming up on the show today, we are going to talk about tipping culture. Okay? Mm. I think that is the term that we're now calling it these days. But first, we've got a new segment for you all. That doesn't really have a name, but Jared was feeling away. And so in the script, we call it Jared's Rant. And
Okay. First of all, I believe it's pronounced Jararant. and that is a thing. No, I wanted to just touch on something that we've actually like dipped into multiple times on this show across the last couple of months with the Don't Say Gay bill and like how I've been thinking about that and Florida more specifically. And I've been thinking a lot about how a more severe, like incisive federal Don't Say Gay law could be a law within the next 5 years, if not less. Being able to mandate the right to erase a whole community of people from education is like wild, right? We begin to wipe queer and trans people just out of the future and reshape how people are thinking and like reasserting marginalization. And like, I can't stop thinking about how conservatives are really, really trying to make us into Russia. And I think that Don't Say Gay and all of the things that we're seeing happening in Florida are really speaking to that. They've already got the stranglehold on the narrative with conservative media. They've made their followers believe an entirely alternate universe of things is happening. And they're really kind of moving the truth into whatever they want it to be or become. And I think that as we're continuing to see these laws passed across the country, as I'm seeing even here in Los Angeles, like the day that we're taping this, we are dealing with myself and the presidents of other journalism organizations throughout Los Angeles are all discussing this situation where our sheriff, Alex Villanueva, is like investigating a journalist and is investigating his political opponents. And it's like horrifying in the ways that we can see them continuing to like try to make us more and more of like this thing that is not a democracy, right? They already have their white supremacist dictatorial leader. All of them that called him a liar and a fraud at the beginning now all do his bidding and praise him. And like, they'll do whatever he says and they'll make the law bend to his whims. And like, we see that here in Los Angeles with a very Trumpy like sheriff. And like, we see it happening in Florida with a very Trumpy governor. And I'm deeply concerned about the state of the country. And I don't think that people are stirred up enough about it and paying enough attention, especially considering we have an election in November. The scariest piece about this to me is that they are trying to like change the way that children think about queer and trans people so that when they grow up, they will look at queer and trans people the same way that people have looked at us in the past before we were able to like begin to have more control of our narrative. And they're years into this plan, right? Like, they're doing a lot, and it's really, really making me concerned. And so I just wanted to bring that to the fore because we've talked about Don't Say Gay a number of times here. You know, we have elections happening right now with midterm primaries and then the midterms and then 2024. And we've every election, we talk about how this is the most important election we've ever had. And we've been saying that since 2016. But like, that's because the stakes are getting higher and higher because Republicans are getting closer and closer.
We've been saying that since 2008.
Well, since 2008, we could say that. Yeah, like we've been saying for a long time, this is the most important election. But like 2024 might be the last general if these mugs get what they want. And I just think it's really important to understand how everybody needs to be thinking about whether or not they're registered, especially if you're in swing states, that you need to be thinking about making sure that you're registered, making sure you're on the voter rolls, making sure you know where your polling place is going to be, making sure you know what the rules are about mail voting, because like Republicans have already said democracy is not the goal, right? They have said that they want to change the rules here, right? They have said that they want to make voting harder and they want to make it a privilege. Like when women couldn't vote, when Black folks couldn't vote, right? When we were 3/5 of people, right? And like, make America great again means something, right? They want to take us backwards when it comes to like social issues, and they want to take us forward into an authoritarian rule kind of thing that we continue to see them doing. And I would just recommend that people like start thinking about these things. There's a really great episode of The Circus on Showtime this past week where people were having a really great conversation about Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. And I think people should be thinking about these things and paying a little bit more attention. And I yield the rest of my time.
I'm gonna say, do you feel lighter?
I don't know that lighter is the word.
It seemed like you had a lot to get off your chest that you know, wanted to get the people, you know, activated about.
Yeah, I feel like I don't hear enough people having conversations about this right now. And it's
interesting.
It's really, really concerning to me.
Well, I'll just add that I
would love for you to be like, I think that was all some bullshit. And
well, I don't know. I always have a reticence when people say, ain't nobody talking about this, or not enough people are talking about this. You know, all of that, because I think it is situational. Like, I do a daily news podcast, right? And every time I get on that motherfucker, right, I'm talking about, you know, the foolishness. That's what I've called it all over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Who knows how long that motherfucker's been going on, right? But, like, I also have to note and just say that, like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
But I'm tired of being mad. I'm tired of being, you know, upset. I'm tired of, you know, being the life source of, you know, of liberal progressivism or whatever. I'm with you that, yes, more people should be talking about it. We should be looking at how consequential all of these elections have been and will continue to be. But also, it's always interesting to me to be from, you know, one of the more marginalized communities and have to be the one to, like, get people interested. Because, like, not only do I have to do the work of survival, right, and the work of navigating the life that we live, but now I also gotta get you activated and get you inspired and get you to care about me. You know, like, I just can't.
I get that.
It's a lot. And so I often find it to be a tough situation when it comes to these types of conversations, because you're right. More people should be upset, and that upset should be visible, and it should be vocal, and we should be figuring out ways to, like, stop what seems to be this regression in social issues that we're all experiencing right now, legislatively at least. So that's even more work that I gotta do. And like, girl, I'm just tired right now and I wanna eat some chicken and sit on my couch and have my booty rubbed up on, right? And like, that is, I think for those of us who are often the center of these types of discourse, the ones who are most marginalized and most othered and often are most impacted by the types of regressive legislative policies that we see, I feel like we're always the ones who are just like working, trying to bring about a better America. And like, yeah, that work is important. But also, trans people in particular, we have always taken care of each other. We have always figured out a way out of no way. And so even in the midst of all of the foolishness, there's also a part of me that's like, we gonna take care of us because we always have. And so it's just super complex. That's probably an episode in and of itself, actually, now that I think about it, because we've been talking for 10 minutes or whatever. But like,
I think a couple of things. One, I am fully with you. Like, I do hate when I hear people say nobody's talking about. So I try to always frame it as I don't hear enough people talking about. Because we also recognize, like, our news ecosystem really has a lot to do with the algorithm, right? So
right.
I want to acknowledge that and agree with you there. The being tired piece is frustrating in that, like, I overstand, at the risk of a HOTEP reference, but, like, I overstand what you mean by that. And, like, you know as well as anyone, like, I haven't, like, done, like, reporting, like, writing pieces regularly in a year and a half because I was so burnt out at the end of the Trump administration after years and years of having to talk about Donald Trump and how he was trash. And I've, you know, joked with you multiple times, like, there's only so many ways that I can say that this man is trash. And, like, I don't know what else I'm supposed to say about this shit.
You got to go into, you know, what I mean? Go into, like, the other languages, honey.
Going to other languages and shit, right? But, like, I am still exhausted with that, right? The last 2 weeks, I haven't watched news at all. And then on Sunday, I, like, watched a few different things to kind of get some context on what I've not seen over the last few weeks. But, like, I'm exhausted. But it also feels like that is the point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To run us down to where we can't fight for things. And, like, I continually fight with myself about, like, how much rest I need to be getting and how much I need to be working. So I totally understand that as well, because I feel that.
And speaking of rest, as you all listen to this, if you're listening on Thursday, Jared and I and a group of our friends.
Oh, I was like, where is this going?
Jared and I and a group of our friends will be, you know, taking a little reprieve from the city this weekend. And so hopefully we'll be able to, you know, get some rest and recharging and have a little fun. So shout out to us.
Yes. Speaking of rest, we're going to give you a rest and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into tipping and why it's actually that bullshit. We'll be right back. We'll do that in a minute.
Alrighty, beautiful people. Now, you'd normally be hearing Jared do his Dipsy voice, but we're not doing that this week because it is the Max Fun Drive.
There's no rule that says supporting your favorite show can't be sexy.
Oh, no.
In fact, there's nothing hotter than opening your wallet and your heart. You didn't know what I was going to say.
I didn't.
If you've been getting some of that good every single week.
All right. No. I want to say that the small of my back was getting moist, but it wasn't.
It was the Sahara.
Listen, dry, okay? Scales, okay? Back there, all right?
Okay, get back to the drive.
Anyway, y'all, yes, it is the Maximum Fun Drive. It is a 2 week period that we do once a year where we make these types of pitches to you to help support our show. In case you don't know, Maximum Fun is the name of our network. And we are a network that is listener supported exclusively. That means the only way we get a check, you know, besides that ad here or there, is because we have folks like you. And if you become a member, or if you upgrade your membership or boost your membership, you get all kinds of access to different little gifts at different levels. Jared's going to tell you about the $5 level real quick.
You can start at $5 a month and get access to all of our bonus content that's been made exclusively for members of...
From the whole network.
From the whole network, absolutely. I'm going to be doing a special conversation with another Maximum Fun host around mental health. And we also offer Fanti Fridays Live, which is our live Zoom call about the things that are happening in the week that we invite all of our Fanti fam to be a part of. So there's exclusive music and digital art, a whole podcast about cheese. There's a whole lot of other kinds of content. And all you have to do is subscribe at $5 a month to get access to all of that. If $5 is less than you feel like you're ready for, $10 gets you the Complex and Complicado Fanti patch, which is brand new this year. And you can put it onto a jacket. You can put it on your wall. You can put it wherever you want. I'm actually really excited about it because we got to help design it. So you can check that out.
But you don't get the patch unless you do the $10 a month level, okay? That's the friend of the family level.
Say you want to go for the Golden Eagle. If you want to go for the Golden Eagle, that's $100 a month. Travel can tell you about what's cool about that.
Like you said, it's $100 a month. You get a HQ access pass and immortalization at Max Fun headquarters, all of that fun stuff. You get a cute custom metal Max Fun membership card in addition to all of the other gifts, you know, and treats at the lower levels. But maybe you are noticing, like I noticed, that Jared jumped from $10 to $100. And you like, okay, hold on now, Holiday. Now, you're going a little too far. Well, guess what? There's also a $35 a month level. So if you're somewhere in the middle, we call it the leadership squad. That's where you get the messenger bag, or you get to choose from, you know, one of the patches. Obviously, you would choose ours and the bonus content. It's, listen, y'all, there's so many options for you at every single price point of what you can do with your coins. And we are just happy for the opportunity, right, for you to support our show. So again, you can do that by going to MaximumFun.org/join. It's a super easy and simple process. And with your support, we'll be able to continue giving you this wonderful good every single week. Okay, honey? Welcome back, beautiful people. Now, the great songwriter once wrote, "Give me pound, give me pound, give me euro, give me yen." Now, surely he wasn't thinking of tipping. But if you've never been a service worker, perhaps you don't know how. Wait.
What? What is that song?
It's a Miguel song called "Pay Me."
Okay, I totally knew that. Go ahead.
But now you just interrupted my flow. Wow.
I'm sorry. I was like, I know I wasn't the only one that was like, "What is this? What song is this?" Go ahead.
You're not gonna know every song by every great songwriter. And that's okay.
I'm feeling attacked.
Now, surely, Mr. Miguel wasn't talking about tipping. But if you've never been a service worker, perhaps you don't know how vitally important so-called gratuity is to the folks bringing you your arroz con pollo or your oxtail and cabbage, okay? But there's been some recent discourse around the etiquette and the politics of tipping. In a story published in the New York Times last week, we'll link to it in the show notes, journalist Christina Morales writes, "Tipping fatigue is widespread. In the thick of the pandemic, Americans dug deeper into their pockets to recognize the hard labor and health risks taken on by workers in every corner of the food business. For many customers, adding 15% or more for a takeout meal or grocery delivery felt like the least they could do to help essential workers. But now COVID cases are on the rise again, and the risk to restaurant workers is still elevated. But as business has returned to something more like normal, many customers and experts in the hospitality industry say that deciding how much money to leave or whether to leave a tip at all has become a tougher decision, complicated by new technology and requests for tips at food businesses of all types, from bakeries and yogurt shops to food trucks and juice bars. And so the girls are feeling away, Jared, about tipping, and we're going to get into the complex and complicado of it all, of folks' feelings. But before we delve into all of that, I know that you have had 1,200 million jobs in your life, but first, tell the people, don't look at me like
now,
that.
Why am I in it?
Don't look at me like that. When we first started this show, so many of your stories were about different jobs that you have had.
Oh, no, I've had every kind of job.
So yeah. I assume that means some of them have been in service industries. Some of them have put you on the receiving end of tips. So, like, give the people an understanding of, like, your relationship with, like, you know, service industries, being a tipper slash a tippy.
The place that I got tips the longest and the most was when I was stripping. But
girl,
other than that,
don't nobody believe that.
Okay, first of all, I reject that.
I mean, if you rejected it, it's for your own reasons. But I'm just saying, don't nobody believe that Jared Hill was doing any kind of sex work. And it's not because of how you look, friend, to be clear, because I know that's how you're trying to interpret it. I'm just saying.
My background with tipping really has to do with, I was a Starbucks barista for a number of years. And so we like collected tips at the register and we got that every week. There was periods where I would do like event catering and like, but also like service. I grew up in my grandparents' restaurant as a little boy. Like there was a restaurant there and there wasn't a whole bunch of tipping for me there. So, like, I've been, like, in and around service industry jobs in this way. But I haven't had, like, a tip from getting a table as a server every day for a year or 2 years or something like that. So, yeah. What about yourself?
So, I grew up working in my grandmother's restaurant.
Oh, my God. Twinsies.
It was initially called Two Cousins Catering Soul Food because her and her cousin had, you know, created the restaurant. But then her and her cousin fell out. And so she renamed the restaurant The Other Cousin Catering and Soul Food. Oh, I love it. I love my family. Anyway, so I grew up working in the restaurant. And, you know, I feel like when you're a kid working in a restaurant, like, the tips are actually not bad because everybody's like, oh, it's cute, you're working at a young age, whatever. And so, like, that was my first, like, introduction to even the concept of tipping and, like, figuring out, like, what was a good tip, what was a not good tip, etc. And then I worked at Cold Stone Creamery. And obviously, you know, people can tip. But back in the day, yes, when I worked at Cold Stone, when we got a tip, we would sing a song, right?
Right. Do they not do that anymore?
I have gone to Cold Stone and I have tipped and I have heard not nary song, okay?
Oh, no. So, the devil is busy.
I assume that that's just like something that has changed. But I remember okay. also how not only doing a good job on the ice cream mixing, but also if like a previous customer had tipped and like I did a good song, you know, with my own particular razzle dazzle on it, that would like cause other customers to also tip because they want to see. Actually, now that I think about it, it gave very much like, you know,
dance.
You know, it gave very much. It gave very much, you know, like.
Dance.
It did. In retrospect, as I say this story, that is what it was giving.
Was
but that's not the point. But to get us into our conversation today, I want to first, what I'm going to be doing is going through different points of that New York Times article. Like I said, we're going to make sure to link it in our show notes so you can check it out yourself. I want to go through different points in that article to kind of tease out you and I's particular feelings and also the broader culture's feelings. And first and foremost, one of the first kind of big points that is here is that tipping culture has, quote unquote, gotten out of control. And the writer, the journalist, links to this TikTok that I remember when the TikTok kind of, you know, made its waves. You know, like when a TikTok video gets taken off of TikTok and gets put on Twitter or gets put on Instagram. I remember the moment when this TikTok kind of went everywhere. Let's take a listen to it real quick.
I'm sorry to say this, but tipping culture has gotten out of control. And I just want to preface this by saying that I always tip. I always tip 20% like standards. I went to this like local, like little, it's like a burger and fry place, kind of like the local version of McDonald's. So like chicken tenders and fries, right? I get up to the pay window and she's like, how much do you want to tip? And I'm just like, what? And she's like, yeah, did you want to leave a tip? And she's like pointing to them. And I was like, oh no, not today. And then I just felt really uncomfortable, but like, homegirl, what am I going to tip you for? I'm in the fucking drive-thru. Oh my God.
Okay, so let's start with this first idea of like tipping culture. If that resonates with you, and do you feel like it has gotten out of control?
So I would first like to say that
y'all.
This kind of feels like being against the war but supporting the troops.
Okay, that type of thinking, okay.
Or hating the sin and loving the sinner, which is some bullshit, just
period.
So we're clear. Or, you know, love the network, support the show, Maximum Fun Drive. I think that tipping is completely bullshit, right? I think the fact that we underpay workers in the ways that we do and then make them survive off of this tip culture that is completely unfair to them, that has all kinds of biases in it, and God forbid you're attractive and white, you probably are going to make more if you have a certain type of body or whatever, like all of those different things, right? We could go on and on about ability and skin tone and all of the ways that all of those things factor into tipping. But I also recognize the service workers who work in tip culture and how important it is for them to get tips, right? And so, like, I am a person who always tips, and I'm always like thinking about it, like it's always something on my mind. But like, I agree with her in this situation. Like, if I'm going up to the counter, or if I'm going through the drive-thru, or if I'm going to go pick up my food, like, who am I tipping? Like, I don't, like, there's no server, but then it's like a collective tipping that we're now going to collect all of this money and then tip it out per week. Like, why don't you just pay people a reasonable wage? It's just frustrating to me.
This is interesting to me because I have never seen tipping to be what it is in part, right? Because what you're saying is, which is the reality, is that, right, in a lot of states, if you get tips, then the employer is able to make your starting wage lower than minimum wage, right? Because tips are seen to be, you know, as long as the tips that you are projected to make will eventually put you at whatever that minimum wage is, then it's like acceptable, right? That's the rule in a lot of different states. And so that's how we get to this point that you have, which is that like my tips should not replace your wage, like should not be the replacement of wages that your employer should be giving you. And I agree with that, but I've never actually looked at my tipping as the replacement of a portion of somebody's wage that the employer should be giving them. I've always looked at my tipping as just like a way to honor, to recognize, to support whoever the person is that is serving me, regardless of whatever their wage might actually be. And so I think because of that, I'm not sure that I kind of subscribe to this idea that like tipping culture has gotten out of control. Because I will go to a restaurant that like requires me to like order at the like it's pickup basically, right? I will go and I will tip somebody, you know, and all they have done is just taken my order behind the counter, right? If that option is presented to me. If I feel like, you know, that person gave me good personality, that person like, you know, asked me questions, or they're doing a really good attempt at upselling me, even though I say no, right? Like those are things that like, as somebody who has been on the other end of that, like, I like to, I guess, reward that because I know how tough it can be as a server to like still maintain, you know, a positive attitude and welcoming energy and like to help people. So like I've never seen it that way, but I also understand why you see it that way.
I get what you're saying about wanting to celebrate the person that did great work or whatever, right? But like that is the scam. Right. Like the scam is that we are paying people based on their character and their work ethic and all this other shit, when that is how it has been sold to us now. Right. As that is how you do this. That is how you treat service workers. But like we're the only people that do that shit. Right. Like we're not the only country, but this is a primarily American thing. Right. Like you go to other countries and it's like, no, we pay the workers like fair wages and like they don't have to live off of tips. And like it's weird in other places. And like it's become a character assessment about how people tip, when in reality, like, and I was going to say this later, but like I look at the way that this is a character assessment the same way that we look at like climate change from an individual's perspective, right? Like I can recycle my bottles and put away my papers and reuse my plastic and all that shit. But like, we know that the vast majority of pollution that is happening in the world and on the planet is really like the work of 100 companies, right? And so like, it makes me feel bad that I'm supposed to be doing something to save the planet. And similarly, like with tipping, it's like, oh, I'm guilted into like making sure that I tip 25% because they did this and they said that. When in reality, like, y'all could just pay people what they're worth.
But see, again, we're not saying the same thing.
We're not saying the same thing. I agree.
What you're saying is like legitimate, and I do not disagree at all. I'm just saying, for me, I have never equated tipping, and I don't, even when I was making tips, I had never, and I don't know how, but I have never equated tipping to being the reason that you equate it to, and therefore all these other things that are now associated with it. When I'm tipping, I don't think about, you know, wanting to hit or hitting a certain percentage point because, you know, Sister Soldier's probably getting $2.25 an hour otherwise, right? But one of the things, this is one of the main points that you have, which is also in that New York Times article, is that some diners believe that tips allow business owners to reflect, or deflect, I should say, the responsibility for paying a livable wage. And I know you said that you mentioned that you had a recent experience at a restaurant that rubbed you away.
Yeah, so it was frustrating to me because I was in a restaurant and they brought out the check and like, I, you know, I always do the math. I'm like, okay, this much percentage, okay, and like just kind of write it down and sign it and keep it moving. But the friend that I was with was like, oh, did you see this? And I was like, no, what is it? And at the top of the receipt, it says that an 18% gratuity has already been added to your bill. And now I'm used to seeing that if you're at a party of six or more and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. right? But like, I'd never seen that for just like going out to dinner with a friend or brunch or whatever it was. I had never even heard of that happening, and I had already gone and put another 20%. So I'm like, I'm paying 38% of a tip because of like some new policy thing. And then I was frustrated because like it was printed there on the thing, but like I'd never even heard of this being a thing, so I didn't know to look for it.
I need some and details. Hold on one second. I need more details. What kind of restaurant was this? You don't have to say the name.
This is a sit-down restaurant.
Is it like a higher class thing, like what are the type of client? Because what I'm trying to get at is I have gone to restaurants where no matter how many people is in your party, they automatically do 15%, especially over the last few years and in here in LA.
I've never seen that before. Well, no, I mean, it's a medium range Italian restaurant that we went to, right? And so, like, I was just kind of taken aback by that. And then thinking of I'm wondering how many people just sign off on a tip and add more to it mm-hmm. without ever seeing that.
Probably a lot. Like,
I would imagine so. And, like, that feels like I'm getting scammed.
But also.
Right? But it's on the receipt.
It's on the receipt. And if you slow the hell down, maybe you would have seen it before you signed it. Just saying. But also, you know, like some restaurants have also just like raised their prices as a means of being able to like ultimately raise the rate of their servers. Would you rather just pay more money for your food and not have to tip? Like, where do you fall on that?
I don't know what the fix to this is. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, when we think about how inflation looks right now, right? How everyone's talking about prices are higher for this, that, and the other. It's like, I don't know if it is a fixable system for us, right? Like, I don't even know how we combat it at this point.
Right, but the one of the options that have been presented, you know, both in this article and in this broader discussion is that I don't want to have to, you know, do this tipping thing. Why not just raise the price of the meal to already include, right, some sort of percentage that goes to the servers automatically? And I'm wondering if it's the amount of money or if it is just the fact of tipping in general that is like contributing to the consternation. Because I hear that idea and I'm like, okay, like I could be into that if you just gonna raise the price of everything on the menu $5, right, or whatever, to ensure that you as a business owner is able to pay your servers whatever.
I think it is are able.
You are able. She is able.
Yeah, you as right. a business ain't able.
Anyway, y'all know what the hell I mean. But like, I hear that, and I feel like I'm right in the middle. Like, yeah, maybe. Maybe your business could be just restructured in a different way to where, like, I, as the consumer, am not paying for, you know, this livable wage. But also, maybe I, as a consumer, should be. Does it change? Does it change it if it's on, if the price of that gratuity or whatever is worked into the price on the menu versus you having to, you know, figure out a value for yourself? I guess that's the question. Do you think it would change the experience?
The reason I don't think this is really all that fixable is because, like, I don't think we have enough faith and trust in, like, business owners and corporations and all of that stuff to, like, do the right thing. And actually, it might end up hurting the workers in this system that we're in right now. Like, that's why I don't know that it's a fixable thing from a restaurant perspective. I feel like that's why it becomes so frustrating, because it's like we've built this whole system on this, and I don't know how we fit. I guess that's why it's complex and complicated.
I actually disagree. I do think that business owners, business leaders can be part of the process of like figuring out whatever the fix is. Because in my head, again, with my granny's restaurant, right, we set the price. and the price for the meals was based on, you know, the price of the materials that went into it, et cetera. But if we took that and added another $5 onto it, and that became like something that spread throughout the culture, that seems to me, because if that's the way that, like, right, the company is going to be able to pay $15 an hour or whatever, you know, the livable wage is that, you know, folks are advocating for, to me, from the outside looking in, that seems like that's something that would change this conversation. But another point in the New York Times piece, because of the pandemic, so many restaurants have moved to like digital forms of like payment, right? So like maybe it's an iPad, or maybe it's the, a little station that they bring to your table to use your so that you can do your card. One of the quotes from the piece is, the act of being in front of someone while they have that screen, they know if you tip, don't tip, or go into custom screens, people in that moment are much more likely to be generous and to tip. So what that's saying is that because, you know, you put your card into this little thing and the waiter is waiting there looking at you, right? They're going to see whether you hit that automatic 15% or 20% or 25%, or if you go the extra mile and you hit that custom tip part and you put in 0.00 or whatever you put in, like that type of pressure, it seems like folks are not liking, which I understand that.
I'm 100% there. And I think that in the last 2 years, I feel like I've been asked to tip in places that I've never been asked to tip before.
And by asked to tip, you mean like on the machine?
Given the option, yeah, right? Like, okay. Oh, do you want to tip? And it's like, I've seen that more and more. And I was like, and then I feel like, oh, I guess I have to tip here. Like, I didn't know that. And I feel like the list of who you're supposed to be tipping has grown, and I don't know who's on it, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, servers and delivery folks and Uber drivers or rideshare drivers and, like, more and more places. And, like, I'm supposed to tip the mailman and the barber and the, like, it's, I feel like there's more and more people that are getting added to that list, though.
Well, I have never tipped a male person, ever.
You're supposed to do that, allegedly.
I have never heard that.
You've never heard that?
Tip the male person? No. Now, I have heard of, if you have, like, a neighborhood male person, right, that it's this one person, they've been on your route for 15, but and this is particularly in, like, a suburban or, like, house context, right? I have heard of folks giving Christmas gifts, like giving money as a Christmas gift.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, you give a tip at the end of the year.
But that, I don't, one, I don't see that as a tip. I see that as a gift. And so, like, it reads differently to me in my experience. But I think one of the things that I'm hearing from you is also, right, back in the day, like, 10 to 15% of your bill was, like, solid. Like, that was acceptable, that was expected, you know, or whatever. I do feel like, you know, more and more, it seems like the expectation is to tip more now. And the only reason I say that is because those automatic options that pop up when you're doing the tablets or whatever these days start at 15%. It's 15%, 20%, 25%, then custom option. Now, I will say, I am not above going to custom tip and putting in the specific value that I want to give. I know a lot of people don't like that because it's an extra step and it makes you have to slow down. But, like, I don't mind slowing down if I look at this screen and 15% of my bill is, you know, $15 or whatever. I don't even know what that equates to in terms of the bill. But it says $15 and, you know, actually, this is something we should get into. I'm gonna finish that statement, but if the thing says 15% is $15 and I don't believe that I had a $15 experience, right? I feel like I had a $5 experience or whatever. I am that girl who will, you know, tip based on my service.
Absolutely.
I have definitely done that before, but a lot of folks don't do that. A lot of folks, it's like 15% minimum or 20% minimum, whether they had a good experience with the server or not. And I have never been that person because I have been a server. And when I was a server, I took great pains which, you know, probably is a commentary on tipping culture and being in food service altogether. But I took great pains to be a great server, right? To be attentive, to bring you what you need, to write down your order correctly and make sure that you have everything. And so when I go out, if I don't have an experience like that, I will tip accordingly. I always leave something. I don't leave zero. Yeah. I don't do zero. But, like, I do believe that, like, you know, 20% is if you do a good job. Like, wow.
Bitch, you doing a good job. Yeah, I will, like, for me, I'm always going to tip as well. But I definitely tip based on service. If the service is, like, really terrible, I might leave, like, 10%. I mean, if it's terrible, I don't know. But, like, if it was bad, I would leave 10%. If it's regular to good, 15 to 20. And, like, if it's really, really great, I'll go above the 20 and 25 or whatever. But, like, I'm always going to tip. The place that I feel like I see it the weirdest is, like, when I get a haircut, right? Some places in town, it's going to be $35. And some places, if I'm, like, in Hollywood and I go to the barber up there, that's going to be $50. But then it's like, I used to always tip $5 on my $20 haircut back in the day. That was a 25% tip. But then when the haircut is $35, it goes up more. And then when it's a $50 haircut, then I got to tip, is it 10, 15%? Like, I never know what the right answer is. And I always feel like, I hope I'm tipping enough. I don't know.
So that's interesting because I have never thought about percentages of tipping when it comes to hair care services, right? Going to the barber. And this is probably because my haircut situation is actually very quick, girl. It's 10 minutes tops. You just shave in the sides and the back. But even when I was getting my whole head done, I always did $5. I always did $5, no matter how much the cost of the haircut was. As I started making more money, I started tipping more because I wanted to show, especially when I started going to queer people, black queer people who do my hair. I was like, oh, I'll give you an extra, you know, $10 or whatever. Now my go-to tip is $10, regardless of like the hair service that I'm getting, unless if I'm getting braids. If I'm getting braids, I'll go up. I could do 20. I could do 30. I've done 50 because it looked that good, girl. And I was like, girl, you deserve this 50, bitch. You deserve this 50. You get it, girl. Because you just whipped and dipped and did what needed to be done. But you're right. I feel like there's maybe more of a standard for food service. Like that 10 to 15% always feels like the standard for food service. And then the hair stuff is just flexible. But one of the points you made earlier is about the judgment on character. And so one of the quotes from the story was one of the people that they interviewed, they said, it speaks on your character how much you tip or not. And I want to be perceived as a good customer.
The piece about that, as I said, like I gave the climate change example a little bit earlier and how that's how I kind of think about it to some degree. But also like, I talked about doing work around the imposter syndrome and working with one of the doctors that I've been working with. We've been talking about what's called stereotype threat, which is like this idea of for marginalized communities that people feeling like they have to behave or perform in a certain way so that they don't live up to a stereotype. Right. And it's called stereotype threat. And I think that anyone that's a part of a marginalized group can understand like the ways in which our groups are stereotyped. And like that is also part of it. Right. Like I feel like as a black person, I'm always thinking about like tipping well because, oh, you're supposed to black folks don't tip.
You want to prove that black people tip right. Well?
And it's like I also feel like that shit ain't my responsibility. Like.
I'm going to say, you should liberate yourself from that, like, friend. You need to liberate yourself from that.
I, for years, had that in the back of my head. And, like, I go back and forth with myself, like, bitch, that ain't your responsibility. Like, you don't represent all black people. And, like, it's a thing, though. But, like, the feeling of stereotype threat and not wanting to live up to that expectation. But also knowing that, like, the service that black folks get in certain places is not the same service that white folks get, right? And that the expectation is that you're not going to tip. And because of that, all of that type of shit makes it really murky and frustrating.
But you know what? Race and gender and sexuality and body type and like all of those stuff that you named earlier definitely do fit in here? Like, and it complicates it because I'm also thinking on the other side, as a server, I'm thinking about like the type of shit that, you know, women in films might be forced to like, or feel like they're forced to deal with or give a pass to because they need these coins, right? And so maybe they are going to unfortunately let somebody be an asshole to them because of, you know, the need to not, you know, negatively impact how much money they could be making, right? I think about the folks who work at like a Hooters or whatnot, and how you are objectified just by the nature of working there, of the type of uniform, and how maybe you're actually not into the objectification. You know, like some people love that, right? Some people love being on display in that particular way, and that's why they do some of those types of jobs, right? But also some people do those types of jobs not because they like it, but because they feel like they've been pushed into a type of corner where because of how they show up in the world, that is the only thing that they can do. And because they're doing it, and because their breasts are out or their you know, cheek meat is hanging out, they feel like they have to endure, you know, that type of sexism, misogyny, etc., that like sometimes happens in space. So that's also in my head. But before we get the hell up out of here, I did just want to hit on some quick stats that I found interesting as I was, you know, as we were preparing. As you mentioned, there are many countries that don't have tipping culture at all. Japan is one of them. Switzerland is one of them. But did you know? But this also seems kind of obvious. But did you know that Republicans tip more than Democrats? That's what the research says. A 2017 survey conducted by Princeton says that Republicans tip workers most frequently and at the highest rate compared to independents and Democrats. I was like, also, but also I feel, no shade, I feel like there's a lot of Republicans who... There's a certain level, a certain type of Republican that like, well, you know... You get some extra tax credits or shit like that. Well, you got, I mean, the money.
As the resident sociologist on the show, I'll say that I think that...
Yikes.
Whenever I hear something like that, I'm like, I really want to know about the methodology. Like, how did this study get conducted? But also, I think about, like, Republicans would do a lot better if they weren't so racist, right? Or so, like, white supremacist in their thinking. And so, like... Yeah, it tends to be overwhelmingly white people. We know that overwhelmingly white people tend to have higher net worths. So the idea that they would be overwhelmingly tipping higher is not hard to wrap my mind around.
But what about women tipping, shout out to the binary, women tipping higher than men? Another survey says that women leave a median tip of 20% compared to men who leave a median tip of 16%.
This is going to sound how it sounds, but...
Uh-oh. Now the disclaimer.
I'll preface this by saying, lately I've been feeling much more comfortable carrying a bag. And I have, like, this backpack kind of bag, but it has handles on it. And I was like, I don't know what is so feminine about carrying things, right? And then I thought to myself, like, oh... The way that we expect women to carry everything, right, to maintain things and, like, take care of things, like, I started thinking about the way that, like, you oftentimes see, like, a mom carrying a bag and stuff like that for kids. And, like, the idea that women tip higher than men feels very much like service workers probably tip higher than people who are not service workers because you know what it's like to have to deal with all types of shit. And, like, I would imagine that women probably have more empathy and sympathy for that service worker.
That was my thinking as well, is that, you know, and also, right, we know that, like, historically service work is has been seen as a woman, as a woman's job, as a feminine job. And so I think
there's a graphic tee that says we don't respect teachers because we don't respect women or something like that. And it's like, yeah, these are seen as like women's jobs, and like I would imagine that that probably has something to do with that.
Yeah. Last quick thing. Millennials apparently are the worst tippers and baby boomers are the best. I don't know if that means because we got less money on average. I don't know. Less.
That's a really hard one for me. I can't wrap my mind around that. Not saying I don't think it's true, but I don't know if I think it's true.
I think there's a difference between older millennials and younger millennials. Let me put that first, because I think in my experience, I happen to hang out with a lot of older millennials. Older millennials typically... have like make more money, typically have greater income. So I think that might be have something to do with it. But then I also think that younger millennials and Gen Z obviously seem to be the ones like pushing up against some of these norms, you know, things that have come to be normal. But that's it. There's many more other things that I also found. Oh, people in the Northeast apparently tip the best, and people in the West and the South apparently tip the worst. I just wanted to throw that out there.
We want to know what y'all think about all of this. I feel like we touched on a lot. This was a very complex and complicado structure. We want to know what y'all think. You can hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on Twitter and Instagram and newly over on the TikTok at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we've got your letters in listener feedback. We will be right back. All right, so here for another moment to tell you a little bit more about the Max Fun Drive. Part of what we love about this is getting to hear from so many of you about how you appreciate the show. And so wanted to look at a couple of your comments and get back to you. One we said from Sarah, she says, I love your show. I think you're both funny, amazing, and have unique voices that must be heard. Must was in capital letters. I think that one was for me. It is wonderful that you give a platform to other powerful voices while shining light on difficult topics. You make us laugh at the same time. Thank you. We also see in response to our episode featuring Dr. Charles Davis discussing the pros and cons of higher ed, the comment, I love when people spell out things the way that they would say them, because this is, whoo, Dr. Davis gave us a whole sermon, and I needed to stop and write in for the first time to say thank you for giving me that word for this conversation. That was from the Dr. Charles Davis episode that we did, talking about our degrees and like whether or not that was important or what it meant to us now.
Yeah, these types of, you know, member comments, we read out an email every single episode because having your feedback is like deeply important to us. But it's particularly important when you all express and say that you love our show and the type of work that we're doing. Maximum Fun is a member-supported network. We don't have any big corporate overlords who are like helping to platform this show, right? We do have a fabulous team in Laura and in Will Hagel and in Melba and all of the folks who have come, you know, alongside and before them that help us do this show.
And shout out to the whole team at Maximum Fun that's in the office that we don't engage with every day. But like,
big
shout out to everybody who helps
big
to make
her.
All of it happen. Travel, should we tell them what the push goal is?
Yes, we need to tell them because
tell
you
them
probably
what it is. You came up
if
with
you're
it.
Already if you're already a member. Hopefully, if Travel remembers to put the email together, you will have received an email by the point you are listening to this episode. But our main BOCO that we are doing here on Fanti, we're going to do a special, extra fun Fanti Fridays salon. We didn't have one for April. Maybe y'all didn't notice, but I don't know if you heard, but Jared and I are writing two books, and my book is due on Saturday, okay? So, you know, she tried to make it work, y'all, but we just ain't had time. And so, on May 6th, we will be doing a salon for all of the Fanti Fam members, Maximum Fund members. So if you are a financially contributing member, you will be getting the information to register for that free, private, like one-on-one, well, 2-on-50 or however many people it ends up being. And then, you know, we do have a stretch goal, okay? And if we hit our stretch goal, which this year, our stretch goal is 1,200 new and upgrading and boosting members. If we hit 1,200 of yous out there, Jared, I've convinced Jared to do we're going to do a recorded ranking of fast food mac and cheese. Okay, so you're thinking, what mac and cheese does that include? That includes KFC, that includes Popeyes, that includes lemonade, that includes, like, we're gonna hit all of the girls that way we can rank, you know, who has the best mac and cheese. Jared is super excited about it, y'all.
I'm actually so excited about it. Like, I am the person that will always taste mac and cheese. Like, I always want to taste it. And the idea of doing a taste test, I don't think you and I have done a taste test together since you were on the radio with me taste testing the Popeye's chicken sandwich.
The Popeye's chicken sandwich, yeah. Yes.
So whatever level it is that you can get in at, we ask that you do $5 a month, $10 a month. You get the new patch that we've just had designed that says Complex and Complicado with our Fanti logo on it. We've got all kinds of different things. And if you want to give more, obviously you can. So would you please consider joining us as a member. You can join anytime at our website, MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah, you can join at any time, but like we want you to do it during the Max Fun Drive, okay? So that's like,
yeah,
right,
like,
now,
it,
all right?
Do it now. Go. Come on,
big
now.
Purr. Welcome back, beautiful people. We are going to get into our listener feedback segment. We've got a quick email here from Michaela. Z uses Z-Zier pronouns. Zier says, hey, Travell and Jared, it's just something I wanted to add to the breakup conversation. Also, this is in response to our, you know, breaking up is hard to do episode. I have definitely done hard removal of exes from my life. Blocking, taking down pics, erasing them from the record. A big part of that for me is that the thing that led to the breakup was a discovery that they'd been toxic. One had been cheating on me, which in a polyamorous relationship is quite an accomplishment. One I discovered had been grooming me from age 13, and like I kind of woke up to the fact that they had been introducing me to people for the explicit purpose of enabling a threesome. One had pretty intense anger issues. There's been some shit. So like things like that. I have complicated feelings around friends staying friends with people who treated me that way. I get it, hun. I definitely
child,
do.
Listen.
I get their lives are their own, and also it makes me feel like they don't support me or believe me. Also, there are a few exes that I have that I try not to be around simply because I still have feelings for them and imagine I'd have a hard time not like mindlessly touching their hand or something. I hope that makes sense and I'm not being too dramatic or anything. I've been accused of being a drama queen before, even by family, so I feel weird sharing this because of that, but I trust y'all. Thanks for all that you do. So let me first say, you are not weird, honey.
I was gonna say, I don't think this is weird at all.
You are not weird. This is not dramatic or anything. I completely understand. And guess what? I have some of the similar feelings. I be looking at my ex, even when we go to lunch or brunch, and I'd be like, damn, that nigga fine. Like, just god damn, that nigga is fine. But like, you know, you recognize the fineness in front of you and then you push past it because, you know, that part of life, at least for now, right, is we're not trying to do that. We're not trying to go back there, right? And so I definitely understand what you're saying, though.
I don't know that I'm willing to be vulnerable enough to talk about how attractive my exes are, but
that last one, honey.
Okay. You know what?
I'm done. That's all I'm going to say because I know he listened to the show. How you doing?
Would you stop? I had to call him after the taping and be like, so just want to let you know we had a conversation on the show. And I think I'm actually seeing them the day that this episode is coming out. Anyway, the piece about like not wanting to be around some of them because you have a hard time not mindlessly touching them or something like that. I've had that problem because certain folks like that are still friends in my life. Like we met because we dated, right? But like that was the way that I met that person, right? Like I met them and like that mm-hmm. was the vibe. And so it's like hard to like turn that off. Especially with someone that you still like, right, as a human being, that you still have definitely positive feelings around. So I don't think that's weird at all. Mm-hmm. I will say to your earlier points about, like, the really traumatic relationships that you discussed and, like, the really difficult things, like, those are definitely the asterisks I was talking about,
fuck
right?
Them.
Exactly. Like, fuck them. Like, what? You do not need them in your life if they were abusive, if they were grooming you in the ways that you talked about, like, really strong anger issues and all that kind of stuff. Like, If it was a toxic relationship or it wasn't a good relationship for you as a human being, like, fuck all of them. So totally with you, Michaela. Thank you for writing in. We appreciate you contributing to the show. Let's get into our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. I just want to shout out a couple of different things. I want to, first of all, for all of my fellow limited series drama lovers, like, I love a good limited series drama that's like intense and twisty-turny and all that type of bullshit. The new one that I feel like the girls are into right now is Anatomy of a Scandal on Netflix. It is definitely a ride. I would say it's not a 10 out of 10. I would give it like a good 7.5, 8. Like, I enjoyed it. I did fly through it. So check out Anatomy of a Scandal on Netflix. I want to give a special shout out to my students at USC Annenberg. Today, the day that this episode is coming out, is our last full day of class. It's the end of my first semester as a teacher. We have like finals next week, but this is our last full day of class. And it's a little bit surreal to me that I'm even saying this right now, right, that I'm having the last day of my first semester. So I just want to shout out to all of my students who have really been incredible to learn from and learn with, but also to teach. And so I'm grateful for all of them because they will always be the first group of people that I've had and the last person that they're going to get to hear from as their guest speaker. They really protested it. And I was like, you guys, come on.
The lies you tell.
Travelle will be our last guest speaker. Students are excited about it because obviously they've been forced to listen to the podcast every week.
Is that why our listener count has gone up? Because you forced your students to listen to the podcast?
All 15 of them. They have been the bump in the ratings. Finally, I just think it's important to say this in public. Viola Davis is one of the greatest actors there ever has been. There is, or ever will be, going forward, right?
Okay, what you hedging? What are you hedging?
That I just want to say that, right? Honey, she made some choices I didn't agree with, right? But, like, she's also not the worst part of the show, and that is saying something.
We should tell the people you're talking about the first
lady. I was trying to not talk about it, but the new show on Showtime is called The First Lady, and it follows the stories of Michelle Obama, Betty Ford, and Eleanor Roosevelt. And I watched the first episode. I did not like this show. I thought it was all over the place.
And that's okay.
I couldn't finish the pilot. And I think, you know, the mouth thing is weird, but like the words that they have coming out of their mouths are even weirder for me. I want to try and like give it a chance, but I'm having a really difficult time. Viola Davis finally responded in a Vanity Fair article. Well, I saw a Vanity Fair article discussing her response. Apparently she made it when speaking to the folks at the BBC. She said, quote, "Critics absolutely serve no purpose, and I'm not saying that to be nasty." She said, "They always feel like they're telling you something that you don't know. Somehow that you're living a life, that you're surrounded by people who lie to you, and I'm going to be the person that leans in and tells you the truth." So it gives them an opportunity to be cruel. But ultimately, I feel like it is my job as a leader to make bold choices. Win or fail, it is my duty to do that. So shout out to Viola Davis. Lastly, about Viola, she has a new special on Netflix with Oprah where she's talking about her brand new book. Viola has a story I ain't ever heard before, and I think you should definitely check it out. Again, Netflix, there's a special with her talking about her new book that has just come out.
I will say that I do not disagree with Viola. I'll just leave it at that.
I was going to say, it felt like a read on film critics like you, and I just wanted to point out the transphobia of it all, but...
No, but she's right. She's right. That is what a lot of critics do. That's exactly what a lot of critics do, so I don't disagree with her. And yet still, maybe, as she said, choices that were made should not have been made. For my honorable mention, I really just have one honorable mention, and it's also a little bit of homework for our wonderful listeners. I've already told you about the book Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop Music, written by Danielle Smith. She's been on our show twice now, if I'm not mistaken, or was it just once?
Once. This will be her second.
It was once. Yes, it was once. And I want to give y'all a heads up. She's going to be back on the pod in a few weeks. We are going to be talking about her book. I have been doing the audiobook that she reads, and I have discovered through listening to this audiobook in particular that I am a Danielle Smith stan, okay? It just is what it is. And, like, I aspire. And so, if you're interested in, you know, being kind of ahead of the game in terms of, you know, one of the episodes that will be coming out in a few weeks, you should check out her book and then also her podcast, Black Girl Songbook, is divine. So fucking good. And she is also, her episode this week, or last week rather, which was the week that Shine Bright came out, she interviewed her husband, Elliot Wilson, who's a legendary hip-hop journalist in his own right. She also interviewed Jemele Hill on this episode of Black Girl Songbook, and she is also on Jemele Hill's podcast as well. So if you want a little bit more of that, you can check it out. But I'm just saying, the book is so good. The audiobook is just like, everything, and you all should check it out. We ain't got no Black History moment for y'all today, y'all. So, oh well, all right? We the Black History. Support Black History by giving to
the Max Fun Drive.
Yes.
Wow. Nice work. We really appreciate y'all's support. We love getting to do this show every week and having a place to come and talk about the things that are interesting to us, but also that are pressing and important. So thank you so much for the opportunity. And we really would love for you to be a part of the Fanti fam by going over to MaximumFun.org/join and choosing the level that you know works for you and being able to support the show that you tune into every single week.
Yes, I will be happy with your $5, okay? Like, no amount is too little
and no amount is too big, honey.
Amen.
All right?
Amen.
Shout out to the size queens out there. All right? And so if you are that girl and you've got a couple extra dollars, we would really, really, really appreciate your support for the work that we do.
All right. We thank you so much for listening. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review. Let us know what you think about the show. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, or now on TikTok at Fanti Podcast using the hashtag Fanti Fam, or you can send us an email to Fanti@MaximumFun.org. As always, you can find us on MaximumFun.org/join if you're looking to join the Fanti Fam as a financial contributor during the Maximum Fun Drive.
And our music is brought to you every single week. You know it by the impossibly impossible Coree, Core.ECE. Graphics done by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our social media support comes from Melba Martinez. And our editor is Will Hagel.
Our producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Show over. Thank you. Wonderful. Wrap it up.